Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mai, speech-language pathologist, and I'd like to welcome you to our show.
Hi, Laura. It's Kate Hensler here. I'm a developmental interventionist with First Steps, and I welcome you as well.
Yay, we're here tonight. Okay, we missed last Thursday, so sorry for the notice about that. I was out of town and couldn't get back in time, so we just decided to save the topic from last week for tonight's show so that I didn't break my neck trying to get in here and get the show done. So sorry about that if anybody was expecting that. And today is Thursday, March 19th at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. I guess it's not standard time, it's daylight savings time now.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. And so if you're listening right now, you're listening live, and we would love to have you call in and talk with us about any question you might have about your own child about tonight's topic, which is receptive language disorders and delays. And our call-in number is 1-718-766-4332. And again, we would love to have you call in and talk with us about this topic. Okay, so tonight we are talking about helping your toddler learn to understand language. And eventually, the behavioral component of that is obeying or doing what you ask them to do. But so many times, parents expect children to be able to automatically follow their verbal directions and do the things that they ask them to do when they're not ready for that yet because they don't understand what those words mean. So tonight, we're going to take a look at ways that you can help your toddler at home learn to understand. Last show we did, which was 2 weeks ago, or show number 28, we really talked about all of the big receptive language milestones. So if you're not sure what those are, I am not going to repeat myself tonight, if you can believe that. So go back and look at that, and then you can kind of see where your child falls. If he's making those milestones, or if he's missing those marks, you'll know specifically what to target. But we're not going to talk about that tonight. Tonight is strictly a show about intervention, our favorite topic, and what we spend hours and hours talking about between ourselves and reading about and really trying to focus what we do. Because, again, I look at myself mostly as an interventionist. Don't you, Kate? I mean, I think anybody can tell what's wrong with a kid. I want to help fix them. I want to make them better. And so that's what I try to focus on at the website at teachmetotalk.com and then here on the show as well.
Right, because I think that is the more challenging part of the, I agree that it's easier to determine, yep, something isn't quite right here. Now, what exactly to do? Although I have to say, Laura, not to downgrade my own skills, but that whole comprehension piece and making sure that kids really are understanding, I think you have honed your skills a bit better than I have. But I've learned from your experience and the videos that you referred to, Teach Me to Listen and Obey, Part 1 and 2. I received copies, so I have watched them. And they really do. I know you spent lots of time researching and just brainstorming in preparation for them. And they've been, helpful for me. So I kind of know some of the stuff, but I haven't fine-tuned it to the extent that you have just to prepare for doing those. So anyway.
Well, we've had this conversation before outside of the show where, you've been so nice and so complimentary talking about the DVDs, and I've told you that filming those DVDs have made me a better speech pathologist too, because it's really made me focus on what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and really looking at techniques, and not just during the filming process, but in the, it takes more than a time or two to get those kids to cooperate.
Right.
It takes more than a day to film a DVD. Usually those sessions, it takes 4 or 5 days of pretty much most of the day or most of the day that toddlers are awake, from, say, 9 in the morning till maybe 2 in the afternoon. And it takes several days of that. And in preparation for those shooting days, I really think about, okay, which strategies am I going to really need to get on the shooting day? And I make sure that I practice that over and over and over in therapy sessions. And boy, self-analysis can do a lot of good because it does make you really think about what you're doing and think about, why isn't this working with this particular kid? So the DVDs, I think, have helped make me a better therapist because it really has made me think about not only what I do and why I do it, but then how to teach somebody to do that as well. So,
right.
They've been
and I think some of the things I had done in the past, but I wasn't as conscious of it and
right.
I wasn't as methodical about it. And when I hear you say it on the DVD, and then, you know, the very next day I'd go see a child to work with them, I'd think, oh, you know, you know, I was much more cognizant of, okay, you need to think about that. You didn't model that well enough. You didn't repeat that enough. You didn't whatever. Help that child follow through on the command. And I would find myself doing it just a little bit better because you had clearly said, and even though I kind of knew it, I didn't really have it that clear cut in my head. So,
well, and I think you just said a really important part too that I think a lot of parents, and I know a lot of therapists miss this, and I'm not just talking about speech therapist or speech pathologist or developmental interventionist or early interventionist, whatever you want to call them. I'm talking about occupational therapist, physical therapist, everybody. We look at something that a kid can't do and think, okay, this is a problem with the kid, sometimes without looking and thinking, no, this is really a problem with me. I'm not really presenting this in the way that this kid can learn it. And so I do think that that process of watching other people do therapy, even when you're an experienced therapist, you can always pick up stuff from other people. And I say to you all the time, you'll tell me a trick or you'll tell me what happened with a therapy session, and I'll say, oh, I'm going to use that. Oh, back up. Tell me exactly what you did.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can, you know, pick up things that I might not have thought to do myself. And I think that's what's so valuable about early intervention programs, because that whole family-friendly thing or coaching, modeling, whatever we want to call that, what we're doing at home, the whole purpose really isn't for us to solely be there during that 1 hour and make the kid better. It's to help teach the parents how to help their own children. And I think you can't do that, first of all, unless you do it. So there are a lot of therapists that just take that consultative model too seriously and go in and just spend an hour sitting at the dining room table with mom rattling off a list of things that she should do without really sitting and playing with the kid and figuring out what's going to work. But secondly is really making sure that parents understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. And don't you have that happen a lot, that you'll have a pretty successful session and you'll leave a mom and you'll think, oh, she knows how to do this, and then you go back the next week and realize, oh gosh, she didn't really get it. She didn't know what I was talking about.
Yes, and I'm still growing in that area also, because I think you have spent more time and energy and just may have a better feel or instinct in how to present things, because I struggle with it feeling uncomfortable, I don't want to say the wrong thing, or I am not explicit enough, I assume people know because they've seen it, and I'm still a growing therapist in that area as well.
I think we all are. You know, and I do think that parents sometimes say we just depend on them to kind of look at something and kind of know how to do it. And like yesterday, I evaluated this little girl who's 18 or 19 months, and she has some receptive language delays and some expressive language delays too, but her receptive language delays, of course, you know, as a speech pathologist, you know, I feel like, okay, she can't say words until she understands words. And by the ways that she responded to me yesterday, she's getting some things but not everything. So I was trying to talk to the mom about it. And the mom is a doctor. She's a nephrologist, which I've come to find out is a kidney doctor. And she, you know, is looking at me. And I sort of started to get that subconscious feeling like, oh, no, she thinks I'm really talking down to her. So I say to her, okay, look, this isn't rocket science. And she said, oh, no, but it really is. It really is. I don't know how to do this. I can do all these other things, but I really don't. I'm out in left field here when I'm trying to teach my child how to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, too, when you're working with parents that you feel like it should be instinctive, or you do feel like maybe you're talking down to them, a lot of times parents really don't know that information, and they do need you to start up or start back at the basics and give them very explicit, black and white, simple things that they can do at home. And we're going to talk about that tonight. And it's going to be more than talk to your child, because don't you think that's the standard recommendation?
Read and talk to your child. Okay.
I'm so sick of that. I'm sick of it. I want to banish it from therapist recommendations.
And I've been in meetings where I was the developmental interventionist and the speech therapist. Those are their strategies for how to get your kid to talk. Talk to him a lot and read to him every day. And I think, okay, that cleared that up.
Let's talk about the problems with those big recommendations. First of all, talk to him a lot. Don't you think most parents are doing that anyway?
most parents, I think, generally do that quite a bit, yes.
Generally they do. And I'm not talking about the teenage mother who's so involved in texting her friends or, you know, is very self-absorbed like teenagers are, or the mom who is, you know, has 10 other kids and can barely, you know, get her hair combed and her own teeth brushed through the day. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the kinds of moms that are probably listening to this show, or the kinds of moms that generally I get to work with, who really are trying and making an effort, and they really do talk to their kids, but it's not, you know, that's a problem. That sums up the whole thing. They're not getting it the regular way. They're, for whatever reason, they're not able to learn language just from being exposed to it in just kind of the typical manner of mom chats about what she's doing during the day, baby hears it over and over, baby knows the word. Usually when we're called in to see a child, that hasn't happened. There's some, well, with children with receptive language delays, there's something missing. There's some connection not there. So that's the problem with the talk to him, and that I think that parents do feel guilty, like, you know, oh, I didn't do it enough, or I didn't do it correctly. You know, and I just hate that recommendation because I think that it really puts so much pressure or so much guilt
right.
on parents who have done a good job with that. So that's the number one reason that I hate that recommendation. And then the second recommendation, what did you just say?
Oh, read. Read some.
Yeah. Ooh, that wild two-year-old swinging from the chandelier is really going to listen to that book, huh?
Yeah, and we are not dissing on reading to your children. We think it's wonderful that if you have a child who loves to be read to or look at pictures with you in a book, terrific. We are not downgrading the importance of that. We snicker because we both work with so many kids who get out a book and try and read to them or even point to the pictures as they're looking at it, and they're either running across the room or hurling the book at your head. And these
right.
poor mothers do try. You know, I mean, I've had lots and lots and lots of mothers say, you know, I really try to read, but he just gets mad. He just runs, or he cries, or he grabs the book from me, or, you know, and there just are a lot of kids, and for sure, I've never seen any research on this, perhaps you have, but there must be an inordinate number of late-talking children who really hate the book thing, so.
No, and I think the reason why is it's kind of embedded with those sensory system issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they are movers and crashers and burners, like you like to call them. They need to move to be engaged and going, and you're not really moving when you're sitting down looking at a book. And if they have receptive language problems, meaning that they don't understand what you're saying, it does sound like the Charlie Brown teacher. So not only do you have mom who's making you sit still so that you want to crawl out of your skin because you have to sit still, secondly, what the heck is she saying? You know,
right.
all you hear is wah, 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 wah. You know, you don't hear or process that, you know, and then it becomes the whole double-edged sword thing. The moms say, well, now I try to make him do it, and then they hold him down
mm-hmm.
or make it so much more unpleasant
right.
that the kid really fights it. And so, you know, I just, again, I think that recommendation is a good one in that, you know, you do want to spend time with your kid and you do want to expose them to books and all the, you know, I don't want to get nasty grams from all the literacy people. The speech pathologists, you're really focused on that because that does have its time and place. But for very young children who don't like to read books, you're not going to be able to do it in a traditional way, and that's probably not the way that they're going to learn language. They're probably doers, and so they need to be exposed to those. You know, instead of looking at a picture about a ball, they need to play ball. They need to throw it. They need to kick it. They need to catch it. Some kids need to lick it. You know, they need to do it to learn what that word means.
Or
they're
smell
not
it.
Get it. Yeah, yeah. They're not going to get it from just looking at that picture in a book. And don't even get me started on flashcards.
No.
Because that's, you know, another horrible, horrible idea for children who have that sensory system. And, again, I think lots of children with receptive language problems do have those issues because they haven't been able to slow down enough or get regulated enough where language means anything to them yet. So that make them read and talk to them, probably not the most effective things that we can recommend as therapists. So if you're an SLP out there or an early intervention person and those are your big strategies, let me give you some other ideas tonight for you to use in that way. Okay, so let's talk about now what we should say and what we can recommend for parents to do. And instead of just saying talk to your child, I think the recommendation that I use all the time is really simplify what they're saying. And I know you do that too, Kate. You talk about not using so much language that the kids are lost in the process. Do you want to talk about that for a little while, how to simplify what you're saying?
Okay. I don't know that I'll say it as poetically as you might, but I do certainly. I just had a meeting today, and it was a speechy kid that I'm actually playing speech therapist on, which I like to do, so that's fun for me. But that was my first recommendation, is let's really, really, really reduce the number of words that we use with her, but make sure that we use them repeatedly so that she's hearing these handful of words over and over and over, and that way it's going to make more sense to her, it's going to be more meaningful for her, and it's going to give her something that she might possibly be able to imitate back. So it kind of meets both needs. This child had kind of a mild receptive delay, but also an expressive delay. And like most parents, I think that you mentioned in the introduction, Laura, that, you know, if they're not understanding, then let's not expect them to say too much. But I think lots of parents miss that maybe their kids don't, their comprehension, their receptive language skills are not really at age level, because kids do understand some things, and that's kind of how,
right,
this, like you just said about the young child you evaluated, she seemed to have some receptive language delays as well. And, I understand, because they do understand the stuff they hear over and over, but when you get too far beyond that, you kind of get the, you're talking to me? Look, I'm not catching that. So anyway, really that's what I say. Let's really, really reduce, just to use a lot of single words or short phrases, so that we're not saying, Jessica, do you want more cookies? Mommy will get you more cookies. Say, Jessica. So she looks at you so that she's attending and paying attention to what you're saying. More cookies? Does Jesse want more cookies? More Jesse? So that she's hearing just those key words over and over and over. And she might just say, more. You know, the mom might say, after she said that, more. Of course, I'm going to encourage the mom to use the sign as she signs more, so that Jesse's got the main idea of what it is mom's really talking about.
I totally agree with that. And I think that we do get caught up in the, you know, the advice, talk to your kid, that you get so busy with long explanations and questions that we do overload kids. And when kids are overloaded, and I say this in Listen and Obey, in the first DVD, and it wasn't a very professional way to say it, but it is actually what happens. When kids are overloaded, they either tune you out and totally don't, they ignore you, and that's why lots of kids on the spectrum, parents think that they're just choosing to ignore them, or that it's somehow a behavioral choice not to respond to words, and really it's just that it's too much, they're overloaded. So they either tune out or they flip out, and those are the kids that you can see, they've gone over the edge when they're overloaded. You know, it's like the little boy we were talking about reading the book. He can't do it, so he tries to get up, he tries to bolt. You know, he's saying, get me out of here, without even saying that, because he's not hearing language at the level that he can process it. So if you're a chatty mom out there and you have a child with language delays, or if you're a therapist and you're thinking, okay, we're not making very much progress here, one thing that you might want to really think about doing is looking at how you talk to him and simplify what you say, avoiding lots of the barrage of questions, the long-winded explanations, and like Kate said, keep it to a few key words, so that the child is hearing those same words over and over again. That reminds me of our little guy that I've seen for about 6 months, but that you've just started to see with me. That mom that we see, and she's an educated mom. She's an occupational therapist, but she's a hand therapist. So pediatrics is not her thing. And she really liked when we came up with that strategy of just focusing on, you know, 10 or 12 key vocabulary words with her child, because she felt like that's very manageable for her. And she's such a black and white kind of person, mm-hmm. that having that goal of that many, okay, I don't have to teach him, you know, 100 words today. I just need to really make sure that I say and present these single words many, many, many times in the course of our day. And I think she felt kind of relieved by that guideline, because it was something that she could, as a therapist, measure and that she could make sure that she did. And it did help her figure out a way to kind of simplify what she was doing.
And I always kind of tie that suggestion to simplify the language to, and let's pair some signs with those words.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why, and this is just, this, there's no research that I've ever read, but just in my own mind, one of the reasons using some simple sign language with young kids with language delays works is because it does slow parents down.
It does, yeah.
And so
yeah.
they're saying, more, more cookie, more, more cookie, instead of that whole long-winded sentence, you know, where the kid, you know, didn't really pick it up and certainly didn't have anything modeled for them that they might possibly repeat back for, you know, to indicate,
right.
yeah, cookie, more. And don't you think that typically developing kids, Laura, as far as language goes, if you said, Jessie, do you want more cookies? Mommy's going to get you another cookie. She might very well say cookie or more cookie. I mean, they do pick those keywords
because
up
they
naturally.
Get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they get it. There's nothing hampering that process. But with kids with receptive language delays, for whatever reason, they cannot tease those words out of there. They don't understand. First of all, sometimes they don't even understand that you're asking them a question,
mm-hmm.
because they don't even know that there's supposed to be a response there. And they don't know which of the keyword to try, even if they wanted to, even if they wanted the cookie, even if they wanted to say it. They are not able to pick those words out, those keywords out. And typically developing kids can, and they can do that from 12 months, 15 months, you know, really young ages. So if you have a child that's not talking, don't just look at that expressive language as a problem. You need to really go back and focus on that receptive language thing too. And I do think, we started talking about this before, even therapists miss that.
A lot.
Even therapists that are pretty good miss
mm-hmm.
that, where you're so focused on teaching the expressive part that we forget, oh my gosh, he doesn't have a clue what I'm saying here. He has not
Uh-oh.
Ever evidenced that he
Uh-oh.
Understood that. So
mm-hmm.
why in the world am I trying to get him to say duck when
mm-hmm.
he doesn't even know what the heck the duck is? Yeah. So
and
I
know sometimes I'm guilty of that too. I mean, I have to remind myself. Mm-hmm. And we've had kids that we shared that really teaching the expressive, the talking part, was a little easier than teaching
yeah.
the understanding part. And sometimes they do kind of, for lack of a better expression, put the chicken before the egg and do kind of learn the talking before they learn the understanding. And we're even having to remind ourselves, okay, let's make sure it has meaning. Let's make sure they really know what they're saying here. You know,
yeah.
reminding ourselves to target the comprehension piece.
And that happens a lot, because you do think, okay, he's saying it, so he gets it. And so you'll hear a kid, again, that might be saying, dog, after you've modeled it and after you're playing with the, you know, say our little linguist toy that has all the different objects, and we've said all those names, you know, and he's imitated dog, bird, choo-choo, and then you put the dog, the bird, and the choo-choo out in a little set, and you say, get the bird, and he has no clue, but you think, or he grabs the dog, and sometimes then you start thinking, okay, he just wanted the dog, so he's going to grab that, and sometimes that's true. They
right.
do just kind of grab the one that they want, but then you start to really kind of analyze it a little more and think, okay, just because he said it, he didn't necessarily understand it. And a lot of people miss that.
Mm-hmm. And
but there are kids that do have – oh,
go
I'm
ahead,
sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
Well, there are kids, too, that do seem to have to say it before they understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Kids on the spectrum are like that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they really have to kind of imitate a word over and over before they kind of own that word and really – understand it. So that happens sometimes, but when you've got a kid that's a pretty good imitator but he's still not really following directions, that's a big red flag that there's a receptive language issue, kind of is the underlying problem there. And so you do want to go back and make sure that you're working lots of comprehension strategies into your therapy sessions with him and mostly into your daily routines at home. All right, let's move on to kind of the next big strategy beyond simplify. Well, this is maybe not a strategy, but it's something that kind of that I paired it with when I was doing Listen and Obey 1, that DVD, is for parents to talk about what's going on in the here and now with a child, talk about what he's paying attention to, using words that he can use. And I love what you said a second ago, when you boil it down to more cookies, you know, there's a chance that she's going to be able to say more or cookie, and she's looking at the cookies, you know, that's talking about what she's paying attention to. So many times, again, parents being so well-meaning, you know, they've been told to talk to their kids, they are, the kid is looking at, you know, whatever toy he's playing with, he's holding a car, and the mom is talking about going to the park or what does he want for dinner or, you know, something that is so off topic, and they don't really, they're not really meaning, you know, yes, it's all good to talk about those upcoming events, and yes, you know, you want to prepare your kid for things that are about to happen, but without, they're missing big opportunities to talk about what the kid is paying attention to. And then in order to do that, to make sure that you know what your kid's paying attention to, you're going to have to really spend lots of time with him. And, Kate, don't you find this, that you'll, even with stay-home mommies, kids might really spend a lot of the day, mommy's home and the kid is home, but they're not really together.
Right.
But the child's doing his own thing. He's walking around. He may not even be playing purposefully. He may just be wandering around their darn house all day. You know, we have the kids that are kind of touchers, you know, they kind of run their hand along the surface of every single thing, but they don't really stop and play with anything that would be, you know, kind of a functional play skill, or they're stuck in front of the TV all day. And again, that might be their choice. You know, they are really visual, so boy, they want mom to keep those DVDs coming. But they're not really engaged with their moms, you know, and maybe mom is involved with an older kid, a younger kid. Maybe there's several kids in the home. Maybe she's even trying to work from home. You know, there may be all these legitimate things while she's, you know, you really can't spend 24/7. But when you look at the time that they're really spending together, there's very little interaction going on. Kid's just kind of doing his own thing. Mom's kind of doing her own thing. She changes him. She feeds him. But there's not a whole lot going on there besides that.
Yeah, and in the mother's defense, oftentimes I would say these aren't necessarily kids who are demanding too much beyond that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because those are the kids who get the language and seek the language and understand the language. And
yeah, and typically developing kids really pick it up.
Yeah.
You know, even from that kind of, you know, there doesn't have to be 3 hours of mommy and me time that day. They just, it's like osmosis, you know, it just kind of happens.
Right. And they tend to want that interaction, whether it be verbal or just social interaction with their mother or father or caregiver, and they demand it. I know my kids did, and I see so many kids through work where I think, what do you mean he'll just stay there all afternoon and watch TV or, you know, push buttons on toys? Or, I mean, I think my kids never would have done that, but I think it's kind of typical that kids demand it. But if the language piece isn't intact fully, they don't seem to have the instinct to demand it the way that kids whose language is developing typically do. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. They lack that initiation piece.
Mm-hmm. Because if all your, or not all, but if much of what you hear is wah, wah, you know, don't know that that's something we would seek. And if we understood it and it was meaningful, I just think that they tend to be more independent, less socially connected children.
Right. So. And moms can really miss that. I mean, you really can't. And my mom jokes about that. I, of course, as you can imagine, was a very talkative little girl.
You don't say. I grew up with the nickname Chatty Cathy. Does that tell you anything?
You earned that, didn't you?
I did. Got it at a study table at my sorority as well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I always got the, you know, great grades in school, except that I was too talkative, but
yeah,
you know, it served me well. But anyway, I have a brother who's 11 months younger than me, And my mom talks all the time about how early I talked, and I apparently could quote, you know, long things. She would read me something, you know, and I learned it pretty quickly. That was, you know, that's my strength, auditory learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would talk about that, and then I was pretty demanding, you know, imagine that, as a toddler. And so she has this baby who's just 11 months younger than me, and, you know, he was big, you know, like a 9-pound baby, and just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But he was very content, she said, just to kind of sit in the playpen all day. And, you know, my parents had a business then. They owned a little restaurant. And so my mother talks about how she really thought, it, you know, in comparison to me, Mike was so good.
Yeah.
Because he just sat there, and he wasn't constantly asking for stuff or wanting my mother's attention. You know, she could actually get things done when she had just him, because he was content to just kind of sit and amuse himself. And then she realized when he was 2 that he wasn't saying anything. And, you know, and the doctor said to her, and, you know, then to take a kid at 2, you know, in 19, what that would have been 69, to the pediatrician and said, okay, he's not talking. And the doctor, you know, just kind of said, well, no wonder. He's got, you know, Laura right there. She talks all the time, probably enough for him and for her. But, you know, of course, we didn't have an early intervention system in place at all. You know, her advice was just to kind of wait and see. And he was a kid that I don't think, you know, even initiated a lot at all. And she was so worried about that. But, again, he didn't demand the attention. And I'm sure she's a great mom. You know, I'm sure she met his needs and she talked to him and, you know, she gave him all that attention, but just because of how he was inherently wired and because he had me who, again, for your word, demanded that she talk to me, of course, you know, who probably got the lion's share of that verbal attention because I wanted it and made sure it was going to happen. I know. That's pretty funny.
Kind of your role, wasn't it?
Yeah.
My father's famous line was, I think you were vaccinated with a phonograph needle.
Funny.
That's a good one, isn't it? That's what he had to say about the girls in my family. They were vaccinated with the phonograph needle.
Oh, that is hysterical. That is funny.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
Okay, back to this recommendation. You have to spend time with your child. And if you have a child that's not really interacting with you, then you've got to start there. That's the first piece. You know, kids have to, before, you know, I said before, they have to understand words before they can talk. Well, before they can understand words, they have to be able to interact with you.
And Lauren,
how we...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to point out, you made a good point about the moms who is talking about something that's unrelated to what's there, and the kid may be sitting there playing with the ball or his truck. And I just wanted to point out the utmost importance of meeting a kid where he or she is and going with what they are naturally inclined to be interested in. And
Absolutely.
Sometimes that's the simplest it can be. I mean, haven't you spent time in therapy sessions? You've hauled in all these toys, you know, the coolest toys you've been able to find, and you end up spending 5 minutes blowing a dust ball across the room because the kid thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, did we plan that? No, but that on that day, at that time, that's what he was really intrigued by. So you could get all kinds of interest and focus and, you know, back and forth communication because for whatever reason, the dust bunny that happened to be under the couch was in sight and you began to blow it and he loved it. So it doesn't have to be, you know, I guess the key is, go with what they are into at the moment.
Absolutely.
Run with it.
And give word and put words on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the dust bunny, you're not going to sit there and say, oh, my gosh, Mommy forgot to vacuum under the couch. Look at that big dust bunny. You're going to say things like blow, and you're going to call it a ball, or you're going to call it something else besides, well, you might call it dust bunny, but you're going to label it with something. And again, I love how you said meet him where he is and make it simple and make it fun and make it back and forth so that you are talking about what he's looking at. Then he's going to look at that and look at you and look back at that. And that's called joint attention. And again, that's a skill that children have to master way before they learn how to talk. That's the first piece of kids learning how to understand, is achieving that joint attention. So that's a great point.
So often those kids, when you do that, boy, you just see their eyes light up and they look at you like this I get. You know,
yeah.
This is important to me. And,
right.
You know, just like the rest of us, if it's important to them, you are going to have so much more success than if it's important. And that's where we can lose them on the books, and we can even lose them on the cool toys. And we can, you know, it's just got to be whatever it is they really love. So.
Right, and following their lead. And again, but you've got to put the words with it so that they can learn to link the word with what's happening. They're going to learn to link meaning, and that's what's happening when a kid does not have age-appropriate or adequate language comprehension skills. He is not understanding. He has not made a connection that milk is that white stuff that you pour in his cup every day. You know, he has not connected that word with that liquid. And so that's what you've got to do, is boil it down to that very basic connection and help them make those connections there. You know, and you can do that all throughout your day. You know, on the DVDs, one of my biggest challenge has been, I, you know, of course, am a therapist, and so how do I teach kids? I teach kids in therapy sessions, and I teach them how to, we learn everything through play. Well, I was really torn throughout the whole making of all the DVDs with, okay, how can I present things and show things that talk about incorporating language into everyday activities? And I really thought, okay, am I really going to film a kid getting a bath? No, not a good idea. Am I going to really film a kid, you know, in their home when they're eating dinner? You know, and I really thought about those things and opted not to do that. But I really wanted to make the point in all those DVDs is you take those same strategies of simplifying, of talking about what a kid's paying attention to, and you use that throughout the day. It's not just something that you do in those little play sessions. However, those little play things, or the time that you spend in play with your child, those little 20-minute focus play opportunities that you can do with your baby are so good, especially for toddlers who are having difficulty learning language. One, because they probably connect better with you during that time. And two, the biggest thing, I think, is that parents are less distracted during that time. And you can really focus on what he's doing and then focus on what you are saying and how you are presenting that information. Whereas if you're just thinking, okay, we're talking about things all day long, and that's great, and we still need to do that. You're still interrupted by the telephone and by the other kid that needs your attention and by the washing machine and, you know, the thousand other things that you have to do during the day too. So children with language delays really need both. They need that one-on-one time where you're just focused with them on, you know, in play. Dr. Stanley Greenspan calls that floor time, where you're really down on the floor with them playing, engaged one-on-one. And you want to do it during your daily routine. So I don't think you can do one without the other. Do you, Kate? For language-like kids? Yeah. Because they're not getting it the regular way. If they were learning language just through daily routines, they would already be following directions and they would already be talking. So you've got to up what you're doing a little bit and spend more focused time teaching in your daily routines, but I think you need it in play too. And I've not come to that decision lightly. I mean, I have thought about this and thought about this and thought about this my whole career. Can you just do it through daily routines? And I believe the answer is no. I think you really have to have that focused one-on-one time too.
Let's say this. I think it would be very hard, because the reality is that daily routines are oftentimes very hurried and, you know, kind of task driven, and you're doing this and you're doing this and we're doing this, and you know, if you had many hours and no other responsibilities, you could, but the reality is it doesn't really get done the way it needs to get done unless it's a focused playtime when caregivers are really focused on, okay, this is I think,
yeah.
Maybe once they kind of learn it in play, it's easier for them to carry it over into their routines. But
I think it is too. And I do think, you know, bath time is a wonderful time to work
right.
on.
That's probably the
language.
Easiest, because that's frequently a playtime, you know, for a lot of families.
Right, and you're not going to leave the kid unattended. And that's the very best thing is you are captive in that bathroom, I hope, and aren't running out doing 20 different things. You're there, and you're doing it, and you're not going to go, you know, stir the dinner or hang up a load of clothes or something like that because you're hopefully worried about safety for your kid in the bathtub. So you're naturally going to be right there with your undivided attention. So that's a great daily routine. But I still, in my heart of hearts, believe that parents, especially with children with even moderate language delays, expressive or receptive, but especially receptive, need to really focus on those one-on-one play dates that they can have just one-on-one with their child without distractions so they can really think, okay, this is my teaching time today. And you still need to do it the rest of the day too, but I firmly believe that you have to have that time or it's just going to take longer.
And yeah,
especially go ahead.
You know, I wonder, just in theory, sometimes we end up talking about things on the show that we never really have discussed. We discuss a lot when it comes to work topics, but I wonder if it's as much establishing the kind of social connection between.
Right.
Because I do think a lot of times that is not completely missing, but it's weak because, like I already said, these kids don't necessarily seek that out, and parents don't necessarily realize that it's not as strong as it should be or could be. And it is neat sometimes to see when parents learn how to play with kids in this way, that they really, both the kid's eyes and the parent's eyes begin to twinkle more because the child realizes, hey, my mom's fun when she wants to be. And the child or the parent has kind of a new appreciation for the child, too, because the child gets a stronger bond, you know.
They fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
They fall in love with each other at that point.
You're going to make me weepy.
I know. But it's true. Haven't you seen it?
Yes.
Where moms don't even really know that it's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might talk about it, but more importantly, you show them. You
mm-hmm.
show them. They see, oh, my gosh, look how he looks at you.
Mm-hmm.
He loves you. And you say to the mom, he can do that with you, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's a big realization. You have that voila moment where mom thinks, oh, my gosh, she's right. I haven't. You know, even without me saying, you haven't done so great with that, huh, Mom? She gets it, and she realizes, okay, this is how she did it to make that connection with him. I've got to copy that same approach, whether it was loud and giggly and roughhousing or whether it was down on the floor, you know, really quiet, teeny tiny, right in their face. And then you see Mom get that twinkle, and then the kid gets that twinkle, and it really is magic. I mean, it really is. So I do think you're right. I think that one-on-one playtime does make a parent focus more on getting that connection. And again, if you have a kid that's not following very simple directions, then you need to back up and look at that social interaction piece. And the very first way that lots of babies with typically developing language, and certainly where we start with all of our kids who aren't doing that social connection piece, is try to get them hooked in little games and in little back-and-forth social routines. And you think about games like peekaboo. You think about games like you're going to chase them and then catch them and tickle them. You know, you think about when they're a little more participatory, you know, how big is baby? Those little games, that's the kind of thing that you want to hook them in. And we've talked about this, those little things on the show before, so we don't have to spend a lot of time talking about that.
But you have a nice article on the website that you go through some of your favorites, so if people are looking for specifics, it doesn't just work with babies. Sometimes the bigger kids love it every bit as much.
They do, and we have some kids right now that were premature that are turning 3 in June, but boy, they respond so much to Itsy Bitsy Spider. And if you're happy and you know it, you know, those little songs and even little things that we kind of make up, your little, do you know what I do to babies? You know, that little routine that you do when one of our little guys starts crying. You know, those little games, those little back and forth, even just little routines that you do with them, that's when we see them lighting up. That's when they want to participate. That's when they're not running away from you. That's when you're kind of hooking them with those social things. So even if you have a kid that's 3 or 4, don't discount those little games, because if they are not understanding language, you need to really begin there and work on that interaction piece. The name of the article on the website is called Social Games for Babies and Toddlers, and it's found, I think, in the expressive language section, or you could search it at the top of the website at teachmetotalk.com. There's a little on the right-hand side. There's a little search place. You could type in there social games, and I'm pretty sure that article will pop up when you do that. Okay, so we've talked about simplifying. We talked about talking about what your child is paying attention to. We've talked about spending time with your child. And then the main thing that speech pathologists try to do when we're working with a child on language comprehension is give them enough cues so that they understand what you're talking about. And the three main kinds of cues are verbal cues, visual cues, and tactile cues. Now, verbal means what you tell him or what he hears. Visual means what he can see. And then tactile means what you help him, or that hands-on where you actually touch him to assist him to do it. So for the Listen and Obey series, I wanted to have a little tagline so that it would kind of make sense to parents, and again, be very repetitive with parents as well, so that by the time that they've watched it, they understand that the main ways that we cue children are to tell him, show him, and help him. And that encompasses the verbal cues, the visual cues, and the tactile cues. So let's spend some time just kind of talking about that. Verbal cues, again, are just telling him. And again, you're not just going to tell him once. I think you made the point earlier tonight, Kate, that you say the same words over and over and over. And you want to do that because, again, if he were going to get it the first time or two that you said it, it would have already happened. So you need to be really, really deliberate about telling him. And, again, breaking it down into small chunks of information, not long, long sentences, but single words and short phrases. And another thing that I like to make sure that to tell parents to do is when a child looks like he's not getting it or looks like he's not attending, is to reword what you've said, maybe pick a different word. Now, I'm not really fond of parents calling, like, every single thing a kid drinks milk. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, Kate. I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you may want to reduce some of the things that you're talking about, or especially with simple commands, present it in a different way so that you might use a different word, or, again, you're going to use that different level of cueing. If you've told him and he's not understanding what you've told him to do or wanted him to do, or he still looks like he's going to have no clue, if you're saying, get the duck, and he's looking around or ignoring you, what do you do next? Then you show him the duck. You bend down and you pick it up. You hold it up and put it right in front of his face so that he can see it. And then if you're saying, get the duck, and he's still not getting the duck, you reach down, you take his little hand, you put it on the duck, you help him get it, and you say, duck, you did it, duck, it's the duck. So you've told him, you've shown him, and you've helped him do it. And I think that's an easy kind of tagline, or, you know, for lack of a better word, for a parent to remember with a kid with receptive language delays. First, I'm going to tell him, and then if he doesn't know what I'm talking about or doesn't respond, then I'm going to show him. And then lastly, if he doesn't respond to me pointing or picking up the item or something, then I'm actually going to put my hands on the kid and help him do what I've asked him to do. And I think that goes a long way with comprehension. It goes a long, long way with compliance or obedience, but it really, that comprehension piece, you've got to work on that piece first before you even halfway expect them to obey or have behavioral compliance with what you've asked them to do. And don't you think a lot of parents, too, just naturally assume that a kid is choosing to misbehave or choosing to not do something rather than they don't really understand what you've asked them to do?
Very often I see that. And I see a lot with, you know, kids who have receptive language issues, but not, you know, they do have some receptive language skills, but it's not really at age level. And so they do follow some simple commands, and parents are making the assumption that he or she gets it because he'll go get his cup when I tell him and go get his shoes when it's time to go bye-bye, so therefore he understands everything else. And, you know, as we get in there and start working with him, we realize, no, maybe he really doesn't understand all those other things. And to me, it becomes obvious when I'm evaluating him or working with him, when I show them so often, then they snap right to and do it.
Right.
And that says to me, okay, he got it when he saw it, but he did not get it when I said it. And that's,
How you know. That's how you know. And that's how you can, that's how I like to help teach parents. I'll say, you know, and I'll point that out and say, see, when I was just saying it, did you notice that he wasn't responding, he wasn't looking at me, he wasn't in any way even trying to do what I asked him to do, but then when I picked it up and I put it right there in front of him, or I reached out and got his hand and helped him find the right one, that's how we know that it's not behavior, because then they get it. There's either, like you said before, a twinkle in their eye, or there's some kind of response that lets you know, okay, you know, he got that then. The other thing is, even when a kid is, if it looks like it's a behavioral thing, like they're running from you or they're screaming, no, you know, sometimes that really isn't that they're, you know, still there's a behavioral component there, but sometimes it still is because there's a big comprehension problem, don't you think? And don't you think parents pick up on the no, or pick up on the, he didn't even look at me, he's ignoring me, he's choosing not to obey, when really there's still an underlying comprehension problem.
Right. And there can be a lot of negativity, but, you know, because the parent feels like he just ignores me or chooses not to do it, so they tend to get mad fairly easily, and the child's frustrated because, mom's always yelling something at me, but
right.
I'm not quite sure what she's always mad about. So, yeah, you know, it, oftentimes there's a little bit of both, but I think when I show a child, you know, I've said, give the baby the bottle, you know, brush the baby's hair, and I get nothing. And then I get the brush, and I say, brush baby's hair. And the child's eyes twinkle, and she grabs the brush, and she brushes it. I think, now you get it. But did she get the words? No.
Yeah.
Did not get the words. Or she would have done it because she enjoyed brushing the baby's hair. It just was she didn't know the words.
Right. And I see that all the time. Yeah, and I so see where parents really have dismissed it as she's choosing not to do it rather than, oh, my goodness, she did not understand that. Yeah, and so then you know, okay, I've got to teach brush. She doesn't know that word. She has not linked B-R-U-S-H when I've said it to that pink thing that has bristles that mommy puts through my hair every day. She's not linked that. And so you've got to say it a bazillion times sometimes to help that child make that connection. And again, you're going to simplify, you're going to be repetitive, and you're going to, again, help her make that connection and show her. And it may not be that first time, huh, Kate? She might not have gotten it from that one time you showed her. The next week when you go back, she still might not get the
book. Might have to show her again. Yep. And that's okay, you know. But it does kind of take some of the frustration, I think, on the child's part and on the parent's part. If there's some recognition that, you know, that's what that means, and, oh, you didn't quite understand it. And I do think, Laura, I don't know that we've exactly said, but you certainly show in your DVDs, like the master that you are, about being as playful as possible, being as animated as possible, and not having it be command, you know. Get the brush. Brush the baby's hair. You know, if you're fun about it, you know, it kind of sets the tone for, oh, this is something fun to do, and kids want to be more compliant and do it if they can do it. So
because they want to stay with you and they want to keep that fun going. And so again, and if you're in that situation and you've said, let's brush the baby's hair, and the baby, you know, and there's no clue, and you've shown her, and she still doesn't want to do it, then what might we do? I'm going to pretend like I'm the baby and I'm crying because my hair's not brushed, you know, and do the big wah, wah, wah. Oh, no, look, baby's hair, brush. And then you take the kid's hand and you help the kid brush the baby's hair. And then you're going, oh, yes, brush, brush. That's so good. Brush, brush, brush. And that makes
it. Is that what you do? Oh, I always go, ow. And then I make the baby cry.
Okay, I might do that too. But you do anything you can do to hook the kid.
Right.
And make them want to participate. It's not all about giving one command after another. And I just read an article about this on the website. It's the third or fourth one down right now if you go to the homepage, teachmetotalk.com, and it's called Teaching, Not Testing. And I have this awesome family right now, and we'll kind of end with this story for tonight, but they are so highly educated. Dad's a radiologist. Mom is a trauma nurse. Although she's staying at home with the kids right now, but so highly educated. And I worked with this family a few years ago because their oldest child just had an expressive language delay. Well, now little boy has come along, totally different from child number one. This is a kid when I'm the first, the little girl, when I met her. She's, you know, 20, 21 months old. And, again, I'm walking in her house, and the parents are, you know, so proud of her. They're saying, you know, I'm asking body parts, show me your eyes, where's your nose, you know, checking off those little receptive skills. Dad says, show her your kidneys. And lo and behold, she showed me where that was. Where's your heart? You know, and he's a radiologist. Did I say that? You know, so they had taught her all these, you know, body parts that I think I have relatives who would have difficulty knowing where those body parts were. You know, I mean, she really honed in on that. She had great receptive language, but oh boy. Next baby, number two, he is not even cut from the same cloth. You know, he got a totally different set of genes from these same parents, and it has been really a challenge for them. And he's not horribly behind receptively, but he does not want to do any of the point and perform kinds of skills that she does. And so one of the things that we've had to really talk about with them is they have to teach him and focus on telling him, showing him, and helping him so much during the day to help him learn language rather than testing, rather than where's the duck? Where's the fish? Show me the bear. Show me the dog. You know, that was the older little girl's forte. She could do that for hours on end, and she was happy, and mom and dad were happy. And you start that with baby number two, who probably is much more typical. And, you know, I think, not to be rude, but I think they really thought he was as dumb as a rock because he wasn't doing that. He wasn't interested in that. That wasn't fun for him at all, and they really had to kind of shift to more, okay, I'm just going to tell him, I'm going to show him, I'm going to help him, to help him make those connections with words, rather than he's going to perform, perform, perform for me. And so there's an article on the website about that. It's called Teaching, Not Testing, and it really talks about how you want to use these opportunities throughout the day and in play, not to just measure what your kid knows or doesn't know, but as a way to help him learn, as a way to teach. There's probably somebody else that's coined that phrase before me, but boy, I did a bunch of searches to make sure I wasn't, you know, that I could give credit where credit was due, and I couldn't find that. So if any SLP out there knows of that, you know, the person that's kind of their thing, I'm not trying to rip off their tagline or anything. I couldn't find anybody to attribute it to. Do you know who that might be, Kate? Have you read anything specifically with those words, teaching?
No, nor have I ever really heard a real life speech therapist that, you know, I've been on teams with use it either. And I like it because it helps me to explain it to parents. It's very simple. I can remember it, and they can remember it too. So
yeah, and I have to remember that too. You know, in a therapy session, sometimes I do feel like, you know, and I feel like that sometimes with the DVDs too, is, oh my gosh, I might not have shown all of the, well, and you can't show all of the months and of every Tuesday at 10 o'clock, I saw this kid and this is what we did. You know, you can't show all that, all the teaching that kind of goes into that, but hopefully, you know, by watching the example, kind of get the idea that it's not all about fire one question after another. You know, you work it into play, you work it into what you're already doing, and that becomes the teaching part. And then you're measuring, again, I think it's so great for parents and for therapists to think, okay, I'm not going to measure the kid today, I'm going to measure me. I'm going to make sure that I say this word 15 times while we're doing, you know, in this next 2 minutes, or these are the 10 words this week that I am going to drive home with him. You know, I am going to say it and say it and say it to make sure that he makes that connection. And then the proof of that is going to be several days, weeks, or sometimes even months later when he can perform those things. But the real measurement needs to be, how well did I teach that, and how many times did I say it so that he can understand it? And then, again, all that information are kind of my stream of consciousness, you know, just as I kind of thought about this family and what we kind of worked on together over the last several months is in that article, and hopefully that'll help some other parents out there.
Sounds good, Laura. I guess we're still being, Laura?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I didn't know if you were still on. You got quiet in a minute. I always like to add one little thing, and I think we implied this, maybe didn't exactly say it. Just a note on the playing and meeting kids where they are, and you kind of touched on it with, you know, some kids don't gravitate or enjoy books. I think just one little note I want to say for parents who are struggling to find things that their kids are interested in or find common ground as far as playing. You were talking about the crashers and burners, as I not very nicely refer to them, those mover kids who have to go, go, go. I think just to remind parents or people who are playing with kids every day to kind of keep that in the back of their mind. If they're trying to do something with their child, some play activity, and the kid's giving them the I couldn't care less what you're doing. I'm not going to pay attention. That's not fun to me. Just remind them to try and put more movement and more action into whatever they're doing. And
right.
I even recommend, and we've talked, I think, about that, about trying to do that even a little bit with books. And if,
mm-hmm.
you know, so if you just kind of plant that in the back of your head, keep it more animated, more playful, more movement, more action. The bigger, the more dramatic and more movement you stick in there, the more likely your kid is to go, now that I like, you know.
That's
not every
fine.
Child, but most kids.
Most kids, and I do mm-hmm. forget that from time to time, even with kids that I'm seeing. I had that happen today with a little girl that I've been seeing for a while. Darling little girl. She's actually going to be, she's not in one of the DVDs that's out now. She's in this next upcoming one that I hope I get out eventually. But she's just darling, and she was adopted from Korea. And her mom is great. She's a physical therapist, but it's not working right now, so she can stay home with her children. And she, I never really think about this little girl as low arousal or I need to get her motor running, because usually, you know, she's up kind of going already when I get there, and so she's kind of ready to sit down and play. But for the last couple of sessions, she's really been quiet. And I was just kind of doing the same things that I normally do with her and still being animated and fun, but I got out balloons today, and oh my gosh, did those words start coming. And I just, you know, could have kicked myself for not doing it minute number one in the session instead of minute 45, or even doing it a couple of weeks ago when I started feeling like, okay, this is, you know, she's processing what I'm saying. Her wheels are turning. I can tell she's learning. She's hanging with me, but she's not as intuitive as she was. And just like you said, I wish that I had really thought, okay, get up and move, get up and move. How can I, you know, how can I get up and do some big stuff with these same kinds of concepts? And so it happens, you know, even with therapists who tell other people to do this all the time.
Even with good therapists, yeah, we have to remind ourselves, and that goes back to your look at what you're doing. Don't,
yeah.
you know, we can change what we're doing, and hopefully that change will have a positive effect on the child we're seeing through work, or your child who's in your home as your own
yeah.
living child. But that usually is the key. If
yeah.
we're pitching and they're not catching, and I mean by that they're not responding, they don't seem to be really right there with you. If you just remind yourself, you know, ratchet it up, as my buddy Laura likes to say, ratchet it up. But so often that is what we're missing, and it may
that's
be
the key,
like,
yeah.
for her, whatever, you said she wasn't as, hadn't had as much opportunity to get up and, I always say, get her motor running.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you may see him at a different time, or her schedule may have changed, and so she is.
Well, and actually what's happened is her schedule did change. She's changed her nap schedule, and so before I saw her in the afternoon when very active and very animated and very precocious 4-year-old, 4.5-year-old brother wasn't there. Well, now that 4.5-year-old brother is there, I've tried to pull it back a notch or two because he gets overexcited. And then he's
really
tackling
likes it,
me.
Huh?
Yeah, and I know this family too from church. And so he's tackling me and wanting to play. And so I do think I've tried to calm down when I go in so that things are more manageable. Mm-hmm. But I let it go on too long. I didn't think, okay, that pendulum has swung too far the other way. Now we've got to bring it back out. And yes, it was more fun for everybody, including the older brother today when I got out the balloons. And yes, by the end of that hour, we were all overstimulated, but she was more engaged, and I did ultimately hear more language. And with her, we're working on comprehension for understanding more action words. So, you know, we got lots of opportunities to throw and catch and kick and do some, location words and prepositions, up and down and under and those kinds of things. So it gave us lots of new things. And, it did make me think, okay, Laura, do what you say. Get up and move, because that really does work.
Well, that's why you're good, because you remind yourself. And I think a lot of us get complacent and go, well, I did my thing. He just didn't get it.
It's totally the kid. Yeah.
Maybe my thing wasn't quite right today, or at least
right.
not for him. But I think that is so often key. If we'll keep it, put the action, put the movement, put the animation, and it, we know that it not only holds their attention better, it does make it easier for them to pop those words out initially, early on. So I always get them moving. Anyway, that's my preaching for tonight.
Thank you very much for that little sermon. I needed that. It probably a little earlier than 7 p.m. I needed it at about 11 o'clock today.
Well, it is Thursday. You'll be back on Monday.
I know.
Well, I'll talk to you later. Good show.
Okay, listen, let me remind you, we're not going to have a show next week. I'm going to be out of town, so we'll talk again.
Week? Okay.
Yeah, and we'll have our next show 2 weeks from tonight, April 2nd.
Okay, very good.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.